Welcome back to Writers on Writing. I'm your host, Marie Stone. Today, I'm joined by Eric Nguyen to talk about his debut novel, Things We Lost to the Water, which was released last year, but is now available in paperback. One of President Obama's favorite books of 2021, the novel follows a family of Vietnamese refugees who fled Vietnam in 1978 and made their new home in New Orleans. The book spans an almost 30-year time frame. Today, we'll chat about working with characters who evolve over time, how family can become a separate character in a novel, creating a strong sense of place, using different languages to deepen the texture of your novel, and so much more. Before I bring him on, a quick reminder that we're now offering some great perks on Patreon. We started the page to keep in better touch with you and get your feedback, as well as offer some fun writing tips and tricks. You can see all the benefits by visiting www.patreon.com/writersonwriting. Any level of support helps. If the show has boosted your writing in some way, you've gotten some useful advice, this is an easy way to reach out. We appreciate it all. On with the show. Eric, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So before we dive into the book, I don't often get a chance to chat with authors whose books have been out in the world for over a year. You know, I'm usually talking to people as the books are being released. And so I just wondered about that experience for you and how your relationship with the novel perhaps has changed as you've, you know, kind of watched it living out there in the world on its own for over a year. Or if, you know, if you think of it the same way, or if reader reaction has changed your relationship to it.
Yeah, I think once the book is out in the world, it's kind of out of your hands, but then you get so many interesting, amazing things come out of it. Like I have readers like messaging me on social media saying like they saw this themes that I didn't realize that I put in there, that I weave in there, but like going back to the text, like, wow, it is in here. And I kind of take credit for it, but it's amazing to see different ways people read it, different ways people react to it, which I guess gives the book, to me at least, a second life.
What are some of the surprises that you've had since then?
I guess it touched a lot of people. I didn't realize that people were looking for this kind of story. Like I had messages from other Vietnamese American people that they saw their family in this, in particular other Vietnamese Americans in New Orleans. They felt that this spoke to them. And I thought that was really surprising. Mostly because like when you're writing, you're all by yourself, kind of in a bubble, and you have no idea how other people would take it, if other people will find meaning in it. So that was a good surprise to have.
Well, and I feel like you, as you know, as you're alluding to now, you gave voice and language to, you're probably an underrepresented part of our population that doesn't have somebody, you're right, to always speak for them, especially the Vietnam population in New Orleans, which as I'm reading reviews about the book and other people's conversations, I think not a lot of people realize that there was a significant Vietnamese population in this neighborhood in New Orleans. And, you know, so to shine light on some of those unknown neighborhoods, I think is such a gift for people.
Yeah, I was surprised too when I went to New Orleans and found that population. Well, I'm from DC originally, and I studied down in Louisiana, and it was a surprise because you don't usually put, I guess, Vietnamese people in the South a whole lot. If they're in the South, they're usually in Houston. So it was a surprise to me, but it was a pleasant surprise just getting to know their stories out there and how they got there and how they live their lives in this already unique American city.
So I kind of assume that a lot of people have had a chance to read the novel, but for those who haven't, no one will introduce it better than you will. So maybe you set the stage and take us into the book, kind of, you know, set us up in this family, and then we can jump off from there and talking about them.
Sure. So the story starts in Vietnam. We have a family, a father, a mother, and a child. They decide after the war to flee Vietnam to avoid persecution. So they flee Vietnam by boat. By accident, the father is left behind. The mother and her child moves forward with their plan. She already had a child within her that they were expecting. The three of them moved to New Orleans from a sponsorship from a Catholic church in New Orleans. The mother tries to get in touch with her husband again to try to figure out what they're going to do next. Unfortunately, they never really get in touch again. And the story kind of is about how they come to understand their new home, how they adjust to this new culture. And each family member find their own way in this new place.
Tell me about the point of entry into this novel for you as writer. Did it start with a character? Did it start with New Orleans as a place to explore the Vietnamese refugee experience? Or kind of tell me what the hook was for you.
The hook, I guess, was the mother character in this. I kind of wrote this trying to understand the Vietnamese refugee experience like that with my parents. So I set the first character as this young adult in her 20s, mid-20s, who had to flee Vietnam and have that refugee experience similar to what I understand as my parents' experience. But then there, the voices of the other family members, the two sons, really kind of intruded on it, on the story. And then I felt it was a good idea to kind of make this kind of symphony of a novel, to have like these different voices tell different points of view of this big story. Originally, I didn't plan to set it in New Orleans. I planned to set it in my hometown of Washington, D.C., but I really felt a wall there. I feel like I knew D.C. so well that I wouldn't be able to write it. There isn't that freedom because I knew the place so well. So going to graduate school in Louisiana really opened up what I could write. And I found the Vietnamese community in New Orleans, and I found basically the perfect setting for this novel.
Well, going back to finding the hook with the mother, you had written a story in, I think, 2016. It was a short story called The Husband Returns. And there was a very early exploration of Huang, who is the mother character in this novel. She's not mentioned much in that story, but she's mentioned a little bit. And I was wondering if either during your MFA program or prior to writing this novel, if you were working with or around her in other short stories, and if that story was sort of a way to start excavating her character.
Well, I start the first chapter I wrote, which eventually became the second chapter in the finished novel. That was the first time I wrote it. It was an MFA workshop. Short stories are usually easier to workshop. So I wrote a short story about the mother fleeing Vietnam. So that's the genesis of it. And I felt like from that short story, I had a world before me that I just needed to explore some more. So I wrote more and more on that story that you mentioned, The Husband Returns. That was actually in the original draft of the novel. I cut it out because it just didn't make sense for the trajectory of the novel, the plot of the novel. But I felt writing that story really gave me a better understanding of Huang, the mother, and her relationship with like her past, the image of her husband, the ghost of her husband, and her new place here in New Orleans, and how she works with her own memory. So I think even though that chapter didn't make it, I felt that if I didn't write that chapter, I couldn't have the same character I have in the final version.
That's so interesting. Were there other chapters that you had to extract from the novel that didn't make it in, but nonetheless had sort of a little life of their own outside of it?
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm trying to think of which particular chapters, but particular chapters, they were important for me to better understand the character, even if they didn't fit into the plot of the novel. Like some of the chapters I wrote were basically out of the timeline of the story. Some of them took place if, for example, a character was from a different city that arrived and interacted with the main characters. How would the main characters react to those characters? And I think playing with those kind of scenarios really gave me insight to how they would exist in the world, what their worldview is to different parts of their life. And yeah, I think these are just really good exercises to have to better understand your character on a different level that's not on the page. So I feel like they become like real humans in a way, if that sounds kind of weird, but I think That's how I think of it.
Yeah, in particular, I was thinking of Kong. I might be mispronouncing his name, but he's the father in the novel, and he's really, by and large, he's absent. So he early in the novel stayed in Vietnam, was left behind in Vietnam, and so we have kind of different understandings of who he is and what his motivations were through these different characters, and we do get a little bit of access to him. But he's one of those characters that I was wondering for you as the writer, if you had to spend, you know, a fair amount of time understanding him and getting to know him, even though he doesn't get a ton of time on the page, to understand his motives and his backstory. And, you know, he seems like a character that you would have done a lot of writing about that may not have made it into the novel, but that we nonetheless get a pretty full understanding of who he was. He feels very alive to me and very realized, even though, you know, he doesn't play as big a role.
Yeah, definitely there were chapters about him, actually from his point of view, that didn't make it. For a while, I thought this would be kind of a parallel story of like the mother and the father, like on different basically countries and seeing how their lives unfold. But I felt it was important to make him a ghost kind of figure that's not really there, but kind of hovers over the other characters' lives. So it was important for me to take him out, but also have little bits of him in there through the memories of the mother character, the memory of him through his son, the first son. And I think going through that process of giving him a backstory, giving him possible reasons to stay behind, giving him like a story of his own kind of made me better understand really how the main characters that are the main focus of the book, how they situate themselves to him, their relationship to him, and what it was like before they left and what they imagine would have been different if he went along with them. So I guess it gave the other characters kind of a desire to get to know him well. And I feel like that desire, that want is really important. It's an important thrust in the book. And it was only getting to know who he is as a person, Gom, the father, that I understood why, for example, his other family members might miss him, how they would react if he was there, for example, to what they're doing in America.
Yeah, I mean, the presence of a ghost, you know, whether living or dead, is so much more oppressive, I think, in people's lives than if the person was actually there, because, you know, now you're projecting onto this phantom all of the disappointments and all, you know, they're there to sort of mirror back to you your failings and your disappointments, and your, you know, she the mother sort of uses him as this authority figure over her sons of, your father would be disappointed, your father would be really let down by this, you're, you know, what. And if he was actually there to speak for himself, we have no idea what he would have said. But I think it's such a powerful figure to make, you know, to make this man not there, but overly largely there because he's not there. For your own experience, I have heard that your parents immigrated, or there were refugees from the Vietnam War, and did not speak about it. And so to that point, if that's accurate, and maybe we can talk about that and unpack that a little bit, but it sounds like that sort of has become the experience of that ghostly character as well, that there's so many unanswered questions and so many unknowns and so many curiosities that you must have had, that I suppose the novel is one way to answer all of those unanswerable questions that maybe you had. And this ghost character perhaps represents some of that you didn't have access to a lot of this information and knowledge of your past.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, like my parents never told any of their kids what actually happened. All we knew was that they fled Vietnam because it was a bad place, that they went to a refugee camp and eventually came to the U.S. Other than that, we knew nothing about their lives back in Vietnam, why they had to exactly flee, were they in danger of persecution, for example, or what have you. So I was always curious as a child as to basically how they came here and how, therefore, how I came here. It was a really personal question that I had to pick through. And I feel like fiction is such a great way to answer these types of questions that are really difficult to grasp. It's kind of like you tell a truth through a lie. And I felt that exploring this fictional family and how they came to the US, how they kind of went through that process of, I guess, assimilation, that made me better understand my own parents' experience. I feel like by imagining it, I could also imagine them going through those phases of trying to integrate themselves into American society. Definitely, I think the father figure in the book kind of represents that unknownness that is kind of hidden from the second generation, I guess you would call it. And it does haunt the second generation's life to a certain extent. Because I think, again, that comes to a very important question of what is your story? How did you get here? And that's why I felt like this was a personal story. I don't think I could have written anything more personal, more personal project.
What year did they come?
I believe it was 1978, or at least that's when they left Vietnam.
So the same as in the book.
Yes.
And they came together. Were they already together?
Yeah, they're already together. Okay. And that's basically all I know.
Yeah. I mean, I had this conversation, well, this was over a decade ago, with an author on the show about her father was in World War II and didn't speak of it at all, period. And she, as a journalist, went about extracting the story sort of against his will as a journalist after, you know, in his older years. And it just raises this interesting question about how much right we have to our parents' stories and how much they owe us. And, you know, I think everybody has to answer that question for themselves. But I think answering it through fiction and answering it, as you say, to answer it through a lie to get to the truth, I think is so much more, I don't know. I mean, everybody has to answer it for themselves, but perhaps a much more satisfying and, you know, there are multiple layers of truth. But I think that haunting of your own childhood and exploring it through fiction makes for a much more personal, fully realized, authentic novel. And that really came through in this. It's also interesting to me to think about the time period in which a book is born into and when cultures are able to absorb stories. And I think, you know, if this had been written, I don't know, 20 years ago, the wounds for this country also were pretty raw. And so to be exploring these issues in a distance, a temporal distance and a different generational distance, I think is also really very interesting that you're not so much reliving the war as reliving the aftermath of yet another generation trying to find their place in this new world where their parents were just getting their footing. But, you know, one of these characters was born in the US and his trajectory is very different than his brother's, who was born in Vietnam. And so I don't know if you have thoughts about the world this book was born into and the right timing of it to have some of these deeper, more removed conversations from the war itself.
Yeah, I do wonder how this book would exist, if it would exist, if it was written like 20 years ago, if it was written by the generation before me. Like you said, I think those wounds that were not healed or healed enough 20 years ago, especially from people who actually lived through this, both from the Vietnamese side as well as the American side, I feel like there are those two sides really suffer trauma, similar to my parents. And I think from my writing, I understood that there was trauma and sometimes you don't want to revisit trauma. And I feel like that's what I gained through writing this. I gained, I guess, that insight that for me, at least, perhaps my parents don't owe me that story. And perhaps they do have a good reason to keep that story to themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of an interesting thought experiment to imagine different time periods. And I think, you know, with the tumultuousness that this country is going through now and the Ukrainian war with their own Ukrainian refugees, a lot of these stories, even though they're set in a different time and with different countries, are so resonant with the experiences that we're going through now that even, I mean, if we say that it was written 20, 25, 30 years ago, even if it was written 5 years ago, I don't think it would land with the resonance that it lands today with, you know, some of the Asian American hate crimes we're enduring, the war in Ukraine, all of these issues feel so very prescient. You know, the book feels very prescient given where the world is. And it just feels like it was born at the right place at the right time to me.
I feel that, I guess, in particular, this story takes place in the South. And I just remember like the shooting in Atlanta of the spa workers. And I feel like it shows the importance of like stories of Asian people in the South, especially in a time where there's a lot of hatred against Asian Americans. I feel like it's just important to tell these kind of stories. And then there's also that layer of refugee stories. I mean, we're in a time period that we see the war in Ukraine and the Ukrainian refugees, and not so long ago, the Afghan refugees. I just feel like the story I'm telling is almost relevant because stories of refugees, story of minorities are always relevant in American history, American literature.
Well, let's unpack the two sons as well. We haven't talked as much about them. So you said earlier that these two sons, it was originally you conceived of it as a novel of the two parents living in two different continents. And then these sons sort of started asserting themselves and taking over the narrative, which I love. So introduce us a little bit more to these two boys who become men and their very different trajectories in the novel.
Yeah. So the first son, the eldest son, is Tum. He was born in Vietnam. He escaped by boat with his mother and comes to the U.S. An outcast because he doesn't know the language. He's different from the kids at his school. He's really, I guess, bullied for being different. And through that experience of being bullied, he kind of wants to grow up and be like a strong person. He wants to almost be a figure like his father. He sees his father as someone who is strong, and as well as someone who holds on to his culture. So he wants to be strong. He wants to be in touch with his heritage. So eventually he joins a gang, and that is his path to finding his identity as this Vietnamese refugee who comes of age in America, but has lingering memories of the past. Compared to his brother, Bin, or he eventually becomes Ben, who is very Americanized. He gets along fine in this New Orleans community. He has friends. And even though he eventually drops out of school, high school, he does eventually get to college and becomes this kind of academic and eventually a worldly person who kind of is at a disconnect with his family, as we see in the later chapters. And I feel like, for me at least, writing them, they became symbols almost of two different types of Vietnamese American experience, of the 1.5 generation and the second generation, and how different they can be, even though they might come from the same place.
As you were trying to unpack these characters, and as I mentioned in the introduction, you know, the novel takes place over, I think, 37, 38 years. And so you have to follow their trajectories and keep them sort of internally consistent of who they started at. They change, obviously, tremendously throughout the book, but they have to be sort of internally consistent to who they always were. We have to make sense of their arcs. And I was wondering if one of these characters of the whole cast was sort of confounding to you or gave you more difficulties than the other characters, if they took more work for you to understand their motivations and who they were.
I think for me, it was probably the eldest son. I mean, I had an idea of who he was when I started adding him to the story. I did want him to be like this tough, macho kind of person, like a lot of the Vietnamese American teenagers that I grew up with. So I had that in mind, but I felt that wasn't enough for his character. I felt like that gave him like a flat dimension. So I tried to unpack why he was the way he was. Why would, for example, someone join a gang? I mean, like the gang part wasn't even in my mind when I started writing this. But once I made him join a gang, why would he do that? And how? How would we interact with that gang? And I felt that I had to explore that question in different chapters that were eventually deleted to better understand who he was, make him more, I guess, three-dimensional. And to my surprise, he turned out to be kind of a really sensitive kind of person, despite this facade of macho-ness. Yeah, so I felt like that was unintended almost, but a good surprise. I feel like I write for those moments when your characters kind of surprise you in ways that feel so natural and something that you didn't think of in the beginning, but then it just like snaps into place and it's perfect.
We'll be right back with Eric Nguyen and Things We Lost to the Water in just a moment. You're listening to Writers on Writing. Another quick reminder to check out our Patreon page. If you're liking the show, If you've learned anything along the way in the over 24 years or so of thousands of episodes, any tips or tricks that have inched you closer to publication, whatever it is, you can support us and help us out and let us carry on doing these chats with the best authors as often as possible. It's patreon.com/writersonwriting. In return, you'll get weekly writing tips and prompts. Let's get back to Eric Nguyen talking about Things We Lost to the Water. Was there a scene that you ever wrote or something where you came to understand something deeper about him that you may not have known before? Like, I'm thinking of, I forget which actress it was, Glenn Close or one of those old iconic actresses. And she said, "I always know a secret about my character that the audience will never know, but it's what the driving force is behind them." And in novels, maybe the audience should know because novels are interior and we, you know, we should have access. But I'm wondering for any of these characters, if there was something about them, a scene you wrote, a way they reacted to somebody, maybe unexpectedly, something that sort of unlocked something for you in your writerly brain of, ah, now I understand what motivates this guy, or I understand what makes him tick.
Yeah, I think for me, the moment that I better understood a character, and this one is for the eldest son again, it's a moment in the book where he's tasked by the gang, a gang, to attack this Chinese woman in the French Quarter because the Vietnamese gang thinks she's a threat to the Vietnamese community in New Orleans. So he's tasked to attack her. But for some reason, it felt right for him to kind of not attack her. And there's this moment when I have him walking away, disappointed. And then he's just, he goes to the quarter, I think, in Jackson Square. And he regrets being involved with the gang. He thinks about his brother and his mother. And I feel like that gave him a vulnerability that I didn't see before, but also his connection to his own family. Like I said before, he was intended to become a rebellious character, but him thinking about his family, him thinking that he sees his family in the French Quarter in Jackson Square, that really, I guess, gave him a fullness in character, but also made him feel like an important part of the family, an important part of the book if I was to explore the meaning of family.
Well, that raises an interesting point about the family itself. I kind of alluded to this in the introduction, that it felt like the family was its own separate character, its own separate organism, separate and apart from the three kind of main family members, that it had its own trajectory and its own arc over the course of the storyline of how these three kind of four, Huang becomes involved with a boyfriend, and, you know, he's sort of an equally ancillary or, you know, important part of their family eventually. So that creation of family as character with its own trajectory, I was wondering, as you were writing the book, if you kind of gave thought to, okay, I have this character arc for the mother, I have this character arc for this son and that son, but you also have to have the arc for the organism of all of them. And it feels like you almost knew that the way the book is written, but I don't know if that was organic or if that was sort of an intentional evolution of the family as well.
I think it became more organic. The first couple of drafts, like these stories of these characters, were kind of their own plot line. But once I was exploring more of these characters, I had to also explore how they interacted with each other inside the family. I feel like to have characters, you must show how they interact with each other, how what one person says will get a reaction from someone else. It's kind of like the law of physics. If you push against something, that thing will push back. So I felt like that was really important in trying to figure out how these characters would push against each other. I felt that was important to make this a family story, to see not only how the individual characters, they kind of go through their own lives, but how their own lives kind of intersect, how they bounce against each other. And I think at the end, the family became more of a cohesive entity, despite kind of the fact that each character goes their own way. There's like the string almost that kind of binds them together despite everything.
Yeah, and that really was a nice exploration of culture too, because I feel like traditionally in the Vietnamese culture, I think of families as living together and generations living together and being very cohesive. But the Americanization of this family which is, you know, stereotypically Americans, you know, kind of ping pong apart from each other and go off in their own directions. And so you can really see that evolution, not only in their family structure, but culturally, you know, that they really have adopted the American tradition of everybody going in their own direction, but still, as you say, retaining that essence of what holds them together and family being the most important thing in the end. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting and well done. I would love to explore the setting and place because, and you alluded to this at the beginning, that, you know, choosing New Orleans because it wasn't your place of origin. And I know you got your MFA in Louisiana, so you had a little bit of exposure to Louisiana, but choosing this very evocative New Orleans is just its own animal, I feel like, and bringing the place to life. You, I think, had written a really interesting entry for, I think it was Lit Hub a couple of years ago, maybe last year, about creating a sense of place and how you went about doing that, both through research, interviews, and through reading fiction. And so I'd love for you to just talk about that. First, about choosing New Orleans as the place, and second, about how you went about bringing it so fully to life, and not the stereotypical New Orleans, which is, you know, French Quarter that we all think about, Confederacy of Dunce's Land, but really this very unique corner of New Orleans.
Yeah, well, I feel it started because of my love for New Orleans. I visited before I got to Louisiana for my graduate program, and I felt like that's probably why I chose a school in Louisiana, because it was so close to the city I really like. But the first couple of times, it was just like, I was a tourist there. I kind of just went to the French Quarter and saw the usual stuff. People would see like Café du Monde, Jackson Square, the cathedral there. But I felt like after going there for a couple of times, I usually went there on the weekends during graduate school. I kind of opened my eyes more, like took off my rose-colored glasses, I guess you can say, and explore the rest of the city and really try to understand how people felt about the city, as well as the physical parts of the city, like the weather, I guess the sounds of it, the smells of it, for example. That's how I got to know New Orleans, the city, as a place beyond this tourist point of view. And I think finding the Vietnamese community out, which is actually out east, it doesn't look like it's part of New Orleans. It's actually almost looks rural in New Orleans East. And I guess that was when it opened my eyes to like this new version of New Orleans. That makes sense. It's a version I never saw before. And I guess the politics of that place, how people felt living there, why they stayed there, why some of them have left. I think that gave me a better understanding of New Orleans as this really dynamic place with its own character, but that character is made of the people who live there. That makes sense. So it was partly, I guess, to your question, partly staying in the city for a while, a long time, and then also talking to people, getting to know their story, and then also reading. Like, I love A Confederacy of Dunces. Like, that's one of my favorite books. But you have to go beyond like a satire, which that is.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so many great books set there. And the thing that occurs to me as well as you're talking is that New Orleans was sort of Louisiana was sort of colonized a little bit by the French. There's a lot of French influences there, as well as Vietnam, right, which was colonized by the French. And so this French overlay of both cultures, I don't know if that's what attracted some of the Vietnamese culture to that spot in New Orleans, but I don't know if you saw any parallels there with that when you were writing it.
Not at least overtly that I saw. There's that Louisiana kind of French culture and like architecture, maybe some of the foods. But in my experience, I feel like that's a weird coincidence,
right,
really, that people who were colonized by the French kind of meet together in this one place. I think it's a coincidence. I feel like most Vietnamese Americans were attracted to the place because, I guess, the weather the jobs,
yeah,
that were available, they're all kind of similar to what they had in Vietnam. So it was easiest to stay there, to build a life there. But I feel like there are like some overlaps between like the French culture and like the Vietnamese culture. For example, French Catholicism is like a thing in New Orleans. A lot of the Vietnamese who came to New Orleans and stayed there were Catholic, and there's like a Catholic church there that's a major part of the community. So I think that's an interesting coincidence. I'm not like a social scientist to say A and B equals like C, but I think it's a coincidence that it's interesting.
Happy coincidence. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that what literature is? Yeah. A lot of happy coincidences. Yeah. As you're talking about the weather and the water, obviously the grand motif of this book, as evidenced by the title, and then throughout the book is this notion of water. And you had an observation, I think kind of early on, about the water in New Orleans acts differently. You know, in Vietnam, the water had been violent, shaking anything that lay atop of it. But here the water didn't move. It stayed still and lazy. And I don't know if because water played such an important role, and it opens the novel and it closes the novel, and we can talk a minute about opening and closing novels. But if that was one of the overarching motifs and themes that you thought of very early on when you were structuring the novel, or if that sort of became clear to you as you were writing it.
Yeah, I didn't intend for water to be a symbol or anything, or a motif, like you said. It just honestly kind of showed up in a lot of places in the book. I guess it's, like you said, like a happy coincidence that that happened. But I guess like once I saw the water motif and how it was working, I kind of lean into it and explore that theme of water and what it could mean. And I feel like because I set the story in Louisiana with Vietnamese characters, I felt like it was natural that the book would explore this water theme. I mean, for both cultures, water is very important. Like Vietnam, the whole coastline is just on the water. Water is part of the founding myth of Vietnam. Water, the word for water in Vietnamese is the same word for nation. So that water there is really important for that Vietnamese culture. At the same time, in Louisiana, water is important to the culture in that there's the Gulf Coast, there's jobs in the bayous, in the Gulf. And there's the understanding that water is dangerous there as well because the hurricanes, the rising sea level. So I guess just having all those understandings about water between the two cultures, it just married so well together. And again, like I said, I kind of leaned to that a little bit in later drafts. But when I started, I didn't even notice it really.
Yeah, it's so funny because I, you know, one of the tricky parts, I think, for novelists or any storyteller is how to get in and how to get out. And water kind of got you in and water got you out. And I was wondering if those early chapters and where you were going to end up were known to you, or if you, you know, after you had a draft or 1800 drafts or however many drafts of the novel there were, you know, you could make that connection to say, okay, we're going to open with the water. This is how they escaped Vietnam, was by boat. And then I won't give away too much about the end if people haven't read it, but water plays an important role at the end. Did you think about that circularity of opening with water and closing with water all the way through, or was that also happy coincidence?
Well, I think for me, I kind of knew where the story would begin and where it end. So I get, at least subconsciously, like I knew something had to tie them together, even if they're like 30 plus years between the starting point and the end point. But I didn't know how to get there. So I felt like a lot of the drafting was just taking the story wherever, exploring. I feel that that's the best part of a first draft, is that you can do anything. The world's kind of opened up to you. And then it wasn't until like several drafts later that the beginning and the ending felt symmetrical. And I had this idea of like a circle. And I felt like it was just natural for the opening to kind of match the ending. I feel like it's a closed circle. I feel like when you're writing and bringing it home, for me, that's like a type of joy, type of satisfaction. So I felt that bringing it full circle was a good thing. Sorry, I don't.
Yeah, know. Yeah. No, I love this. I love this. I mean, I do talk to a lot of, you know, we have that whole conversation about their pantsers and their planners. And it seems like the effective novels to me kind of know where they're going to get in and they know when they're going to get out. And then the middle is a little bit, who knows what's going to happen, as long as we can find our way to this exit point. And that gives you, as you say, it just gives you a lot of freedom to explore. The characters can act authentically because, you know, you haven't plotted out out their every move so they can surprise you. But if you don't know where it's going to end, you have no idea where it's going. It can, you can really feel at sea, I think. Not to play on the pun there, but it can get confusing, you know, where you, if you really have no idea where you're going. So I like that idea of saying, okay, I know we start here and I know we have to get out at this point. And how they get there, you know, is going to be a fun exploration, both for the reader and for the writer. And having some sort of guiding principle with the water, I think is really great because it kind of grounds you a little bit. And I've been thinking about that a lot with time lately, how to structure time in novels and drawing a circle, however wide it is. This is 30 years, 30-ish years, but being able to circle, you know, draw a circle of time around your novel so that it's in some sort of time container seems like it's also helpful so that you at least know I'm not really going to go all the way. I mean, because a novel like this, it could be easy to spin back to, you know, back in 1950 when mom was born. It could get out of hand, you know, and so creating that container of time, I think, is really helpful too.
Yeah, I think it is. When you envision a long time period, I feel like, especially if a date that the story begins and a date that the story ends, it kind of, it's almost like a security blanket kind of thing. Like you can only fill a tub or container of so much water. Sorry for the pun. And I feel like that gives you almost a structure, even though like I wasn't working on an outline, having the ends, the start and the end. I think that gave me at least something to work with, like the bare bones where I can wrap a story around as the meat.
Where were the sticking points for you? Because I talk to a lot of novelists who say the middle is just, middles. And I was wondering if there were scenes in here, if there were places where you got stuck and how you got yourself out of it.
I think the toughest chapter was probably the middle chapter. Well, it's about the middle. It's the chapter that has three characters all at once. We kind of move between all three different characters. Mm. Mm-hmm. I had trouble with that because it's a balancing act between these three characters, and you want this balancing act to be smooth, so like it's not too jarring for the reader and of course the writer. So that was a part like I really struggled to try to make it organic, to flip through between these three characters in a very quick succession, because like the other parts of the novel, you get a whole chapter from one character's point of view. In contrast, this middle chapter was flipping basically sometimes between paragraphs, between characters. So I don't know how to, I think partly was making it present tense, made it feel urgent by having it in present tense. So I felt like that kind of gave me leeway to move between characters really quickly. And I also feel like that present tense, that energy that I tried to show in that chapter, I felt like at the end, it was like really natural for it to be like that. It, for me, it gave me the energy of New Orleans, or at least the tourist part of New Orleans, where that chapter takes place in the French Quarter.
Yes, I totally agree. And I hadn't even, as you're saying it, you're right, I hadn't even focused in on that as present tense and the rest of it is in past tense. Yeah, I like liberating yourself from the rules that you've set out for yourself in the book, because you had said some advice, I heard in another interview, you say some advice you'd gotten early on is that novels teach you how to read them. And this novel certainly did that. And so I think that right in the middle where you can break some of those rules and say, we're going to do it this way for a minute, especially in the middle, because it kind of wakes the reader up and puts them in a different mindset. I really like that. I'm wondering now, I'm trying to think about that chapter and think if that could have almost been its own short story, but I think not. I think it could only have been in here. But as you were talking about extracting other chapters out of here and making them their own standalone pieces, how did you come up with that? Was it trial and error? as you're working through revisions, how did you work through those revisions and know when they're working or trying something else, like switching from past to present tense and playing with point of view?
I honestly think part of it's just like experimenting and see what works, what makes sense. I feel sometimes like writing is about feeling, but also about logistics, the logic of emotions, the logic, physical logic of a place, how that would happen. I feel almost like sometimes writing can be like a science and there's a solution out there and you're trying to add up all these elements into that solution. So I come sometimes to revision, especially as if like it's almost like a math formula, which I guess is kind of weird to say because like I hate math. I'm bad at math. But I feel like almost it's a formula that I don't know is out there, but there's a particular solution. And the revisions are my way to get to that.
I love that. Say more about that. And when you know you're done, when you know you've hit the right, is it more sort of a feeling you have, an intuition that, yeah, this feels right now? Or is it outside readers coming in and saying, yeah, now you've got it?
For me, I think it's kind of intuition. It's kind of reading through and feeling like everything makes sense, that everything feels inevitable. I feel like making a story inevitable is really important. It has to be surprising. Like it keeps readers on their feet, but whatever happens at the end, all those surprises should add up into something greater. And I feel like that's when I know that something is complete. It's when all the different elements of a story kind of adds up to this inevitable part that a reader will read. And like they say to themselves, like it could have only ended this way. This was the only right ending for the book. And I feel like once I read a work of mine that I get that feeling, I feel that it's finished.
Surprising inevitability, I always hear. Yeah, that's always the goal. And it's so elusive. It's so hard to get there. The last thing I really wanted to mention before we have to, well, maybe a couple more things, but so language. So you grew up speaking Vietnamese or at least understanding Vietnamese. Is that accurate?
Vietnamese was my first language. Eventually, our household became more of my bilingual household because the kids went off to school. We learned English. And basically, it's now we code switch between Vietnamese and English pretty well. I can't speak Vietnamese really well, but I can pretty much understand it.
I mean, the thing that's interesting to me whenever I talk to bilingual authors or trilingual authors or anybody who speaks more than English is the depth and texture that the second language brings to English, even if, I mean, so this novel incorporates some Vietnamese phrases and language, which is its own texture. But I also feel like just having that whole subterranean knowledge of Vietnamese informs the way you probably speak and write English as well. And earlier in the interview, you were talking about how the same word, Vietnamese uses the same word for water as for country or nation. And I just think that access to all of these different textures for how language works and how words are used, and Vietnamese is so different than English, that it would just inform your English and inform your writing. And I don't know, I mean, maybe it's hard for you to see that because you're in it, but I wonder if you have felt that way, if you feel like your first language really informs your second.
Yeah, I think it does. I feel like languages differ from each other, obviously, but I think they differ so much, like in terms of not only like vocabulary, but in terms of Vietnamese, we have different letters that are on the page. Vietnamese has like those marks around the words. English does not. Vietnamese also have a different sentence structure, grammar rules. And I feel like having been a Vietnamese speaker, someone who kind of sometimes thinks in Vietnamese, I feel like that kind of melts into the canons, the way my sentences are structured. And I feel like that is really important when you're writing a book, especially about like a particular population, because that gives it like a certain depth, a certain feeling of almost foreignness. Like I feel like it's important for my book to have those influences of Vietnamese, even though it's in English, because it's how the characters think. I feel like that makes for a richer reading experience on the language level, just the way a language and a structure can kind of influence another language.
I totally agree with you. And I think there's a lyricism and a poetic way that you approach the English language in this and the way the characters spoke to each other. You know, it came in the dialogue. And I mean, every author has their own unique voice, but I just felt as though, and I wondered if you also felt as though, the subterraneanness, as I keep referring to it, of the Vietnamese language really informed that. And it sounds like it sort of does. And I assume do you read out loud to yourself your passages as well?
Yeah, I do. I feel like a poet. I just read it sometimes just for the sounds, really. So like sometimes like it's not just like what the words mean, but like the sounds, do they sound good together? So I feel like reading poetry has like really helped me with that part of writing.
I have to tell you that I both listened to the book and read the book, but I listened to the audio version of the book as well. And first of all, you have a fantastic reader. She was wonderful. And it makes a difference because I think so many readers now experience books through audiobooks. And so listening to it is now just as much of the reader experience as reading it on the page. And so I think it's even more important now for authors to read their books out loud to themselves to understand how it sounds, you know, in the reader's mind. So getting in our last minutes together, I would love to chat about MFAs, finding agents, all the businessy stuff of writing, and if you found that getting an MFA felt a little bit essential to you, if there were pros, cons, how you felt about that whole process, and if that was the way that you ultimately found your agent and found this the way to publication.
I think my MFA did help me. Part of it was because it's in Louisiana, easier research, and I was able to write the book because I was in Louisiana. But I think the MFA also taught me two things. First is like time management. When you're in a graduate program, you're taking classes, but you're also teaching classes and then doing all types of other stuff for, in this case, the English department. So I had to plan out my day, when I would write, when I would go teach, when I would take classes, et cetera, et cetera. So the MFA program kind of ingrained in me that really practical skill of managing my time. I think also going through an MFA program, the workshop is a really important part of the program. A workshop is where you send in part of a manuscript, people comment on it, what's good, what's working, and what's not working. And on one hand, that really helps you get into like a reader's mind about what they're thinking when they're reading it, but also kind of helps you harden yourself against criticism. Mm. I feel like I came out of the program with like thicker skin, knowing that people might read something in a different way than I read it, and that I can agree with them or I can disagree with them. At the end of the day, it's my story, so I can pick and choose kind of who I listen to. In terms of getting an agent, I guess I did the traditional route. I queried agents who I thought might be a good fit for me in terms of like who they represent in the past, what books they've represented in the past. And I queried them. Some wanted manuscripts, others did not. And eventually I found my agent.
I've become obsessed lately with Ocean Vuong and Viet Thanh Nguyen. And I always wonder if writers read within the genre they're writing in, or if that kind of throws them off. Do you kind of avoid some of those writers that you feel like are in your subject matter space, or do you embrace them?
I embrace them. I mean, like, I feel like my work would come from that tradition, even if that tradition is more recent. But in my mind, my book would be in conversation with them, and it just works off each other in a way. I feel like writing a book is my way to kind of speak with other writers and their ideas. So I feel like it's important to kind of read stuff that is the same genre as your stuff, working with the same themes even, just so I can explore the ideas in a way that adds to a conversation that's happening in the bigger context.
Last minute words of advice or wisdom, things that you were told either during your MFA program or you discovered along the way in writing this book that were particularly useful to you as a writer?
I think the most useful thing I've learned throughout this experience is you just have to do the writing. Yes, it's like it's like button chair. Your butt needs to be in a chair in front of a computer or pen and pad, and you need to actually like sit down and write. You need to make time to write. Otherwise, you're not a writer. You have to do the act of writing to be able to call yourself a writer. So I think just doing it, you're already a step ahead. Just sitting down and writing, you're already on your way to being a writer.
Did you give yourself daily goals, or how did you set your writing life up to get work done every day?
Really, my writing is just, I have a set amount of hours I write each day. I write within those hours with no goal of actual word counts. Okay. I just have to write those hours, and that's how I schedule my writing. I feel like that's more relaxed than having like particular word counts. I feel like some days are bad, some days are good, but the important part is that you write.
Touch your characters every day. So you have a website where we can follow you. What I think is just your name, yeah?
Yes, ericpwin.com.
Perfect. And up there, you can see, I referenced that short story that sort of touched on your main character in this book, The Husband Returns. That's up there as well as, I don't know if you're probably done with promoting the paperback now, or we're probably catching you on the tail end of promotion, but that's probably a good way to follow you. Are there other ways to follow you online?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Eric Nguyen is okay. And I'm on there sometimes.
I love that. Eric Nguyen is okay. I love that. Well, this was a pleasure. Congratulations. I love this book. And I can't wait for the next one so we can chat again.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
That was Eric Nguyen. The book was Things We Lost to the Water. It is out and available in paperback now. In addition to our Patreon page, you can also visit our websites. Barbara's is barbaradeMarcoBarrett.com. I think she also is at penonfire.com. Mine is mariestone.com, mariestone.com. You can always subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, and Stitcher. As always, our fantastic music and sound design was provided by Travis Barrett. You can find him at travisbarrett.mykajabi.com. That's mykajabi.com. That's all the time we have for today. Tune in next week, and thanks so much for joining me. Have a great day.